So for us, vocation is really all of humanity, and specifically those who have been baptized into this priesthood, we would say, which is every Christian, is called to offer their gifts and talents, first and foremost, their life itself, their existence, back to God in that priestly act. And that's really what we would consider to be vocation. So that means that a doctor could become a holy doctor, a lawyer could become a holy lawyer, and really anybody can become holy in whatever circumstance they find themselves. They don't have to just be a priest or a monastic in order to live that life of Christ-likeness.
For a lot of people who struggle with who they are in Christ, just hearing those few words from our guest will hopefully move their thinking in the right direction. Welcome to another visit we call Come Receive the Light. Our host, whom you'll hear from in just a moment, is Father Christopher Metropoulos, and I'm Mike Trout. This weekly broadcast is produced by the Orthodox Christian Network, and we're on the web at myocn.net. In the book of John, in the New Testament, Jesus is teaching his disciples about being an effective follower. In the 15th chapter, he says, quote, "I am the vine, you are the branches. Whoever abides in me, and I in him, he it is that bears much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing," end quote. During the interview coming up, one of our focuses will be on that word, whoever. You're not a more effective follower of Christ if you have some title before or after your name. Maybe you do certain things better or easier as a result of education and experience. But in the eyes of God, your worth, your importance comes down to that concept of abiding in Christ. More on that and a few other things in just a moment. If you're not already on our website, myocn.net, take some time when you can to be ministered to by all the articles, videos, streaming services, radio broadcasts like this one, and more, which you will find there. And realize that it all keeps going because people join with us financially. Maybe people like you. Again, that's myocn.net. And now here's Father Chris.
Michael Tischel is the Crossroad Director and OVM Assistant Director. He received a Bachelor of Arts in Comparative Historical Theology from Gordon College and a Master in Theology Dogmatics from the Aristotle University of Thessalonica. He has been involved in youth ministry both on a high school and college level for a decade, working as a youth and young adult leader at his parish, for his diocese, and for the Orthodox Christian Fellowship. Mike, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Father.
You know, sometimes I see people who think they've gotten a lot of gifts, and frankly, they don't have many gifts at all, in my judgment. Who am I, the sinner, to say? But how do we know if we have any God-given gifts or talents?
Sure. As you well know, Father, I think it's important for us to start from a more big-picture level, just to remember that from the very foundation, as far as who we are as human beings, as creatures of God, being created in his image and likeness, just our very life itself, our very existence is a gift. It's a gift of love from God. I know it can sound a little bit cliche or trite, but I think the real hard work there is internalizing that theological truth. And sometimes it takes a moment just to stop and contemplate that and say, okay, yes, I am a creature of God. My life, my existence is a gift, and how can I understand that and actualize that in my everyday life? And then under that umbrella, I think we can discern many gifts, anything from, you know, more societally accepted gifts and talents, like a gift for public speaking or for leadership. But then, you know, there are many other gifts that maybe might not seem as important on a societal level or, you know, kind of as a producer, but are extremely important and relevant to our lives as Orthodox Christians, such as simply being able to greet somebody, a stranger or a friend, with a bright smile in the morning or saying a warm word of encouragement. I've been on the receiving end of that many times, and I don't think people that actually give those gifts are really aware of how significant of an impact they have on the receiver. So as far as discerning which gifts we have. I think it has to start from an attitude of gratitude. So in other words, starting to exercise that muscle of gratitude about life in general and kind of asking ourselves, what do we have to be grateful for? And then there are some very practical tools. We use some of them in our programs, such as the Strengths Finder assessment tools, which can be found online, and many other tools that can help us kind of discern our unique set of gifts and talents as creatures of God.
There are many people, and I said before that there are some people whom I've seen who think they have talent and really don't have much talent. Right. We see a lot of that today in the news, in the media. They're sort of flash in the pan, and they're gone within a month or even a week, some in a day. They have this sort of very faint moment of fame, and the world seems to think that those faint moments of fame are more important than a constant sort of graph of gratitude and an attitude of gratitude, as you said. Now, there are many people who are tremendously gifted out there who are helping a lot of people. There are the unsung heroes who are out there meeting people all the time, as you said. Maybe it's a greeter at church. Maybe it's someone at your work who comes up to you and offers you a cup of coffee or puts his arm or her arm around you and says, you know, you're doing a great job.
Yeah.
Those types of things, those sharing. How does the so-called, quote-unquote, normal person really understand what their gifts are?
I think that's something that our faith has a lot to offer in that regards, in the sense that we are a very communally oriented faith, as you know. And I think that a crucial element to discerning and understanding our gifts is being a member of a what I like to call a thick community. So in other words, you know, we're surrounded in our everyday lives, but by various communities, whether it's an online community that we're a part of, or a book reading group that we're a part of, or even just a community of local neighbors that we greet in the morning. You know, these are all sort of levels of community, and there are thin communities and there are thick communities. And I think one of the unfortunate characteristics of our day and age, especially one that is kind of shifting more and more to kind of a globalized online community, is that very few of us find ourselves in places where we can actually become members of thick communities, of where people actually know us and we know them on a deeper level than just saying hello in the morning. But, you know, they know both our strengths, they know our weaknesses. We sort of rub up against each other to smooth each other out. And I think once we can become a part of these thick communities, or at least have people in our lives who really know us well, we can even go to them and ask them, you know, where do you think I would be able to serve? What gifts or talents could I offer? And they can sort of serve as honest mirrors of that. I think you were mentioning the challenge that our world is faced with these sort of fleeting expressions of talent in various forms and in the media and things like that. And I can't help but wonder, you know, how people like that, let's say, who think that they are more talented perhaps than they actually are, could have spent, you know, their whole lives, you know, where people around them wouldn't be honest with them and say, you know what, maybe this isn't your gift, but you have so many other gifts in other directions, and encouraging them and cultivating those other gifts and talents. And I think that's where having people that know you well is such a blessing in that regards.
Well, the word vocation, I had the privilege of serving the school, Hellenic College and Holy Cross, as a director of admissions and then dean of admissions for a total of about 10 years.
Yes.
And I go back to the word vocation. I remember when I traveled around and we would recruit students all over the United States, and the word vocation always came up. But people, when I spoke about the word vocation, they always seemed to equalize it to the word priest or priesthood or ordination. Can you talk about vocation and royal priesthood a little bit? Help us understand that, Mike.
Absolutely. I think this is one of the common misunderstandings or misconceptions of what vocation is all about. And it has its historical roots in the fact that for centuries, especially within the medieval times, the understanding was that God called individuals to specific, you could say, occupations only when it had to do with ecclesiastical roles. So, you know, I would be called to become a monastic, I would be called to become a priest, but really when it came to teachers or doctors or lawyers, they would be simple Christians, but they didn't have as much of a sense that they were called by God to be a doctor or a lawyer or something like that. And then further down the line, in about the beginning of the 16th century, when Martin Luther and the other reformers came onto the scene, they started to question this, you could say, somewhat limited understanding of vocation, of calling, and say, well, how about those cobblers or those doctors or, you know, those simple lay Christians who perhaps do have callings in that regards. But then progressively that became secularized, that understanding, and then the idea was that you are called, in other words, what occupation brings you the most fulfillment? Mm-hmm. So sort of to make a long story short, you had these two extremes where you had on the one hand this notion that vocation is explicitly God calling you to become a priest or a monastic, and then on the other hand, you know, God wasn't really in the picture at all, and you just felt called internally or by society to become a doctor or a lawyer or something like that. And then some research and scholarly work has more recently been done from the Orthodox community saying, well, hey, wait a second, maybe this question of vocation hasn't been something we've explicitly discussed. But as Orthodox Christians, it's clear that God calls all human beings to love him. And that means that there are many, many ways, many manifestations of how we can love him. And it's not only limited to God calling us to a specific occupation, because we know that people lose their job. They might have a change in love or desire halfway through their occupation. But it's God calling us to respond to his love, whether it be as a lawyer, whether it be as a family man or woman, whether it be as a pedestrian down the street, kind of on a moment-by-moment basis. So for us, vocation is, as you mentioned before, this notion of the royal priesthood that really all of humanity, and specifically those who have been baptized into this priesthood, we would say, which is every Christian, is called to offer their gifts and talents, first and foremost, that being their life itself, their existence, back to God, in that priestly act. And that's really what we would consider to be vocation. So that means that a doctor could become a holy doctor, a lawyer could become a holy lawyer, and really anybody can become holy in whatever circumstance they find themselves. They don't have to just be a priest or a monastic in order to live that life of Christ-likeness.
So you brought up the word doctor.
Yes.
But there are good doctors, and there are doctors with vocations, right?
Sure.
Can you explain that a little bit? Can you go a little deeper for me?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, something we try to distinguish in our Crossroad program is the difference between being a good person and being a Christian. And that may sound odd to some of the listeners initially. You'd think, well, as Christians, we're called to be good people, which to an extent is true. Obviously, we're not called to be bad people. But this whole distinction between good and bad people, and really this notion that in order to be a Christian, all I have to do is sort of be nice and, you know, smile at people, even though we mentioned that before, is really a limited understanding. A much broader understanding is the sense that we are actually called into a relationship with Christ. So our understanding of vocation is that he loves us first. This is a very scriptural understanding. And that through that, we are called to love him and our neighbor. And so a good doctor could be an ethical doctor, could be a selfless, a service-oriented doctor. And you would find that in many places, people that adhere to many different faith backgrounds and religions. But a doctor with a sense of calling is one who actually sees their practice as a ministry, and in a very priestly sense, sees it as a means to offer back their lives in love for God because he loved us first. So there's a relational element to being a doctor with a vocation that doesn't necessarily exist when you say that I'm just a good doctor. It's a relational element between the person and Christ. And then through that relationship, that overflows to the patients and the nurses around the doctor.
Isn't it really all about relations, Mike? Everything we do in life is about relations. We're created to live with people. Adam and Eve were created. What are some of the most creative examples of service that you've come across?
Well, actually, in the Crossroad program itself, we engage in you could say, a excursion. We go out to Cambridge, nearby Cambridge, Massachusetts, right where Harvard University is located. And we actually will walk the streets of Cambridge and in search of someone on the streets to take to breakfast. And it sounds like a very interesting endeavor, but it's a very powerful way of encountering the other in a somewhat uncomfortable environment.
I'm sure.
And one that isn't necessarily focused on helping them or fixing them, but really meeting them face-to-face, person-to-person, equal-to-equal, and getting to know them as a human being created in the image and likeness of God. And then if they so desire, taking them to breakfast to share a meal together. And I think this is a very powerful act of love, of service, in the sense that many of the barriers that we often wrestle with in our volunteer work, which is that of maybe being the privileged population and serving the underprivileged population, many of them, at least for that moment, are sort of lifted in this particular encounter. Because really, you're striving to just see the other person as a human being, as a person, and to get to know them and to engage in a dialogue with them and come to the understanding that I am being served just as much as I am serving them. And granted, you know, it has its flaws and its faults, as pretty much every program that we can create does on this earth. But I have found it to be extremely powerful, again, just in being aware that someone who may not look like a good person or a nice person or a person of depth or of character can often surprise us in many ways. So that's something that we do in Crossroad. I just recently, Father, came across an example of another sort of non-conventional service project through a TED Talk that I listened to or I watched the other day. And this had to do with avoiding the trap of what this speaker called otherizing. So our tendency to objectify the other, whether it's someone of a different political ideology than us, a different religious belief system than us. And so her initiative was one of taking the other to lunch. So she said, whoever makes smoke come out of your ears because you really disagree with whatever it is that they adhere to, that's the person you should take to lunch. And not to pretend like you're one and that you agree with everything they have to say, but really to try to get to know them beyond that ideological disagreement. And just to conclude with this idea, I think I can't resist mentioning this beautiful word in Greek that I absolutely love in this regard, especially when we talk about service, which is misalodoxia. It's translated as bigotry, but it literally means hatred of anyone who has a different ideology. And I think especially for, you know, Crossroad students and things like that, we really try to encourage them to see Christ's teaching as one of love for enemies. So if, you know, whoever your enemy is, whoever you hate, whoever you hate because of their ideology, because of their actions, you know, those are the very people that Christ calls us to love. And how
sounds
that
like
looks in everyday life, you know, that's open to discernment and to understanding. But really, this understanding of loving the other, the one who we think we could never love, I would say the essence and kind of the most fundamental aspect of our faith.
I think we should put that on a postcard and send it to our senators and congresspeople in Washington. That might help. That might open some doors up. Let's springboard to the Crossroad program itself.
Absolutely.
Tell us briefly about the program, some of the dates coming up. I know it's been extremely successful, and we want to do whatever we can to help you get the word out there. So tell us about it.
Crossroad, as it stands now, is a 10-day academic summer institute. We run two sessions of Crossroad. So this year, just to briefly mention the dates, we will be running our first 10-day session from June 20th to the 30th, 2015. And then the second round will be run from July 7th to the 17th. And the priority deadline in order to apply, because there is an application process, is March 2nd. So it is coming up faster than we think, and actually the applications are already posted on crossroadinstitute.org. But I've always thought about how to talk about the Institute and how to present it, because it's not enough to just say that it's an academic summer institute. It's much more than that. So I thought that on this occasion, I'd like to just read a one-sentence reflection by a Crossroad alum that I think will really capture the essence of Crossroad a lot better than I could just by explaining it.
Okay.
And this one-sentence comment is by an alumna of the 2011 Crossroad program, Elise Zappia. And Elise says, "Before Crossroad, I was a 17-year-old girl struggling to find out where I was going to go in this world. I realized I wasn't alone. We were all trying to find who we are. And I quickly understood what each one of us really needed to love." That was really the message that she took from Crossroad, which is to love God and neighbor in any circumstance. And we have many other similar testimonies to people who came really having no idea what the program was about, being a little reticent, thinking it was just another church camp, and coming and forming amazing friendships, amazing bonds with like-minded teenagers from all over the country that have lasted for years and years to come, and hopefully a lifetime, and really having a much deeper, richer understanding of their faith that surprised them into thinking, wait, you know, I had no idea that my faith was this deep and this rich. And
let me ask you this. Cost?
Sure.
How much does it cost?
Yes. So at this point, we have a partial tuition fee of $500. That, I say partial tuition fee because the actual cost for the program for each participant is much more than that. And we have a lot of generous donors and foundations that have, through their generosity, been able to cover the majority of the fee. We also note, and this is very important for anybody out there who's interested in applying, that our application process is needs blind, meaning that people can go through the application process and we will review the applications without considering whether or not they're able to pay. So someone will be accepted to the program regardless of whether they can pay for that partial tuition fee. And then we have a financial aid process where if someone does have a financial need, they can write a little paragraph description and fill out a little application. And thank God, you know, again, I think this is another miracle that up till this point, we have never had to turn anybody away based on financial need. We've always been able to cover their financial need. And so, you know, that's never a prohibitive factor as far as people applying to the program.
The age again? What are the ages for applying?
Yes. So it is ages 16 to 18, which means those who have finished their junior year of high school and those who have finished their senior year.
Okay. And the $500 covers their tuition, it covers their events when they're there, it covers their meals, their room and board. What does it cover?
Exactly. It covers everything from the moment they step onto campus here on Brookline to the moment they leave. They do have to cover their transportation costs, but again, financial aid is available sometimes even for that. It depends on how much we have from year to year.
How many young people participate in each session usually? You have a limit, I would imagine.
Unfortunately, we have a limit. We would love to accept every participant, every applicant who applies for the program, but based on our current situation, we're only able to accept approximately 60 participants. So that would be about 30 participants per session.
Okay, that's a problem for me. I want to know why you can't accept more people.
Sure. No, absolutely. Well, at this point, part of the Crossroad philosophy is that we believe that in order to create a proper pedagogical environment, mm-hmm. it has to be a very healthy ratio of staff to participants.
Gotcha.
So we keep the participant level very low in order to have that communal environment, mm-hmm. which means that we limit it to 30 per session. So at this point, the only way of expanding would be to create an additional session, which would require additional staffing and, of course, additional support from our donors and things like that. So at this point, we're very open to expanding the program. It's just we're trying to support the current two sessions.
I hear you, Mike. I just figured I'd get it out there. And if someone out there is listening to us and they believe in this tremendous ministry that you're doing with Crossroad, I hope that they'll step forward and help you out. One more time, where can people go to get more information about the Crossroad program?
Our website is www.crossroadinstitute.org. So that's Crossroad singular, crossroadsinstitute.org. And worst case scenario, you can always Google it, just Crossroads Summer Institute, and make sure that it's the Institute in Brookline, Massachusetts, because I believe there are a few others out there.
That's great. Thank you, Mike. Thanks very much, and we wish you all success.
Thank you so much, Father.
Again, you're listening to Come Receive the Light from the Orthodox Christian Network in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Our website is myocn.net, and we'll have all of that contact information that was just mentioned on our website. Just go to myocn.net, click on Listen. That's the Listen button on the homepage. That will open up all of the audio resources we have. Select Come Receive the Light and go to this particular broadcast. Once more, myocn.net. Our host each week is Father Christopher Metropoulos. I'm Mike Trout. Thank you again for spending this time with us. Share the fact that we're on the air with your friends and encourage them to listen. You can hear this conversation and others from Come Receive the Light again when you go to the website, myocn.net. Join us again next week if you can, and remember to always have faith in what you listen to.